Hey, good evening, Truth Seekers. Mike Malloy here on Nova M Radio Network. As you know by now, if you pay attention to these sorts of things, it was announced early this evening, late this afternoon, the death of Molly Ivins of recurring and metastasized breast cancer. She was first diagnosed with this form of cancer in 1999 and had a radical mastectomy and several rounds of chemotherapy. She was given a 70% chance of remaining cancer-free for 5 years, which I guess she pretty much almost made it. The cancer returned in 2003 and again last year. And lately she had suspended her twice-weekly syndicated column. She made a brief return to writing in mid-January, urging readers to resist Bush's plan to increase the number of U.S. troops deployed in Iraq. She compared her call for people to resist to an old-fashioned, what she called, newspaper crusade. In a column, her last one published in the January 14th edition of the Star-Telegram, she wrote, quote, "We are the people who run this country. We are the deciders. And every single day, every single one of us needs to step outside and take some action to help stop this war. Raise hell. Think of something to make the ridiculous look ridiculous. Make our troops know we're for them and are trying to get them out of there. Hit the streets to protest Bush's proposed surge." And then she ended that piece by endorsing the march in Washington this last Saturday. She said, quote, "We need people in the streets banging pots and pans and demanding, stop it now." She was 62 at the time of her death. I, like most people, are familiar with her activism, her point of view, her wit, her humor, her left-wing politics. She's going to be missed. Really, really, really missed. A lot of people listening to this program out there of a certain age, you know what I'm saying when I say that's one of the dicey things as you age, is you stick around long enough, you know, till it's your turn to step off this mortal coil. You stick around long enough to see some really decent people pass on. And the other thing I was thinking when I heard the news this afternoon was how difficult it is to how language has been totally moved from in instances like this, from the secular to the religious. You know, I was thinking about thinking to myself, "Goodbye, Molly, and Godspeed." I thought, "Wait a second, what are you saying, Malloy?" You know, or something along the lines, "Well, she's at peace now. I've had two immediate relatives die of cancer, and one was a long, drawn-out process. It was horrifyingly painful, and it was difficult to watch him," that was my brother, "deal with it." And another family member who was diagnosed with lung cancer and died 5 days later. But to watch someone go through the pain of treatment and the pain of the metastasizing of this disease is grim. And when they finally do die, trying to find the right words inside your own head, "Well, he's in a better place," or, you know, and all of that is not applicable when you are fully a humanist. And you know that, you know, you're a human being, you have a certain amount of time here, determined by nothing really, except circumstance or chance or whether or not you chose to get up that day. And it's difficult to find the words to acknowledge that someone's passing. That's where I guess a religious belief or a spiritual belief serves a good purpose, and that is to provide a basis of language within which or from which you can offer comfort or condolences or make comments that express your own personal grief, but also the hope that the memory of that person is will live on. But anyway, it's just sad. My mother, who lived to be almost 90, said, and this wasn't her statement, but she liked it. She said, "Growing old ain't for sissies." And she absolutely right. Penny, I got several emails about it. I'm just going to share one with you. Penny from Oxford, PA wrote, "Mike, I just saw the headline about the death of Molly Ivins after several bouts of cancer. I can't help but wonder if a small portion of what we're sending into this filthy war in Iraq had been used for cancer research instead, well, Miss Ivins might not have had to be overcome by the disease. Molly Ivins was 62 years old. It's been said that only the good die young. If that is indeed the case, then Bush, Cheney, and Romney will all live into their 90s and beyond. I am not a religious person, so I can't sit here and honestly say that God has taken Molly Ivins to a better place. I will hope that she has reached a place of peace in the universe, and I thank her for her contributions during her life. Her passing has left the world with a little less light tonight. I will miss her." Penny in Oxford, PA. That pretty much says it. So, just a moment of silence here for the passing of Molly Ivins. I also got an email today from someone who said, "Mike, for your listeners who slip up and utter verboten language when they call the show, there's a great website where they can feel free to express themselves." And this is kind of interesting. It's the old broad, and she writes from Dead Leg, Texas. I don't know if that's real or not, but when I saw this today, you know, and then a couple hours later, heard about Molly Ivins passing, I said, is that coincidence or what? But there's a website, oldbroadspeaks.blogspot.com. And Ward, who sent this to me from Japan, said she writes from Dead Leg, Texas, about the Bush crime family and the wars in the Middle East. She holds no punches, and then ends each post with a music video. Check it out. She's great. oldbroadspeaks.blogspot.com. And then Ward also included, "For teachers and parents or grandparents who are freaking out about what the future may hold for their kids, here's a wonderful positive website to help kids learn how to grow up with an eco-friendly, sustainable lifestyle. Yes, we need to fight political battles right now, but we also need to keep our spirits up and teach the young ones to visualize the future they deserve and show them how to get there. There are articles and activities on a wide range of topics at this site: climate change, consumerism, food, transportation, energy, etc. It is presented by a non-government organization, but is written in Japan. It's called Japan for Sustainability, but is written in English as they're reaching out around the globe. They encourage feedback from kids. The site is called Create Your Future, and it is, the website is kidsforfuture.net. Kids, F-O-R, future.net. Kidsforfuture.net. Yeah, we're going to miss you, Molly. We'll be back after the break.
So long, honey dear, where I'm bound, I can't tell. Goodbye is too good a word, baby, so I just say fairly well. And it ain't no use in turning on your light, baby, I'm on the dark side of the road. But I wish there was something you would do or say to try and make me change my mind and stay. But we never did too much talking anyway. But don't think twice, it's all right.
21 past the hour. A quick note to any terrorists, foreign or domestic, if you want to paralyze one of our major cities, you don't have to do anything as horrific as flying an airplane into a building. You really don't. Just go to the toy section of your local Walmart and pick up a stack of light brights, and then make cartoon characters giving the middle finger and stash them around the city. Trust me on this. Everything in the city will grind to a halt. Everything. They'll close rivers. Everything will stop. Can you believe the coverage this PR stunt by the Cartoon Network got today? I don't know. I staggered. What did I do? I took a late morning nap or something. I came downstairs about 12:30 and looked at the little kitchen TV, and there it is. Ah, Jesus, God, Boston, what? And it went on, for 3 hours, 4 hours. The local Boston, some WHBH or whatever the station is in Boston that was providing the feed for both MSNBC and CNN, they had some young reporter out there. I don't know, his hair was standing straight up. And he was just so breathless. He was just like, yes, and the police have walked over here now. And a few minutes ago, they walked over there. And it just went on like that. It's just astonishing, isn't it? Something that should have been handled at the most by some local television guy with his hair straight up. But no, there it was, all over cable, network, coast to coast, border to border. The coverage has got to go way beyond the fondest dreams at the Cartoon Network. They got hours of free publicity on all the cable channels, and coverage tonight, brief coverage, but coverage nonetheless on the network channels. This was better than a Super Bowl commercial. Are you kidding? Had they had to buy this time, it would have cost them hundreds of millions of dollars. God, the event did knock Bush's little ego trip to Wall Street, and Joe Biden's mouthy comment about Barack Obama. He's a clean and smart black guy, right off the headlines, huh? Biden ought to be something between Biden's brain and his mouth that whenever the brain sends signals to the mouth, this little device, some sort of a trap door, just slams shut. Now, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if Biden decides to check himself into a rehab clinic somewhere and, figure out if he's a racist. He's no more of a racist than any white person in America. This is what I tried to talk about in this program a lot, briefly. I don't get into this a lot. But this is the attitude of every white person. Come on, that's the way it is. This is America. And the only people this upsets, really, are white people. Black folk have been dealing with this for 450 years on one form or another in this country. They trot out, Jesse, what do you think? And Jesse Jackson has to stand there and say, I don't think it was racist. No, it's just white. And Biden, Biden has as much chance of becoming president of the United States as I do. So the attack against him by the pigs, the human flesh-eating pigs like Limbaugh, is not because Biden is a Democratic presidential candidate or whatever he's going to do. I don't know. But it's because he's the chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. That's why. That's why they're going after him, because they're asking the wrong questions. But the hypocrisy, I saw the clip on CNN or someplace of the filthy, degenerate pig man trying to work his grunting audience into a lather about Biden's comments. And it's just amazing. Rush Limbaugh, who's a drug user, who has, apparently he has erectile dysfunction, or else he's using Viagra when he makes his, he got called it Viagra coming back from Dominican Republic, where, you can have sex with children. So, and this piece of human waste makes a comment about Biden. Biden just needs to learn to shut up. He's really got diarrhea of the mouth. I don't think Biden is a racist. He's a white man. He's a white man in America, which means this is the way he thinks. This is the way he talks. This is the way all white men And most white women. This is just why white folk talk. This is just, I mean, Jesus, what are we supposed to do? We've only been dealing with this for 450 years. Don't expect us to get over it so quick. I mean, my goodness. Clean. Jesus Christ. We'll be right back. Give me one to pass them. Drip, drip, drop, there goes an orgasm. Now you coming out the side of your face. We tapping right into your memory bank. Same. So click at the ticket. Let's see your seatbelt fastened. Trunk rattling like 2 minutes in the back seat rattling. Speaker box vibrate the tag. Make it sound like aluminum cans in a bag. But I know y'all wanted that 808. Can you feel that BASS bass? But I know y'all wanted that 808. Can you feel that BASS bass?
Making the pie higher, it's more of Mike Malloy.
Standing tough under stars and stripes, we can tell.
26 before the hour. Scooter Libby trial today. I just want to mention this. This is an email sent by Tom and Ann Arbor to both me and Peter Werby. Who, of course, Peter, a good friend of ours, and excellent left-wing talk show host in Detroit on Sunday nights. But Tom writes, Mike and Peter, I'm sure you're aware of the revelation in the Scooter Libby trial today. David Addington was required to read a handwritten note by Dick Cheney that implicates George W. Bush in the leaking of Valerie Plame's name to the press back in July of 2003. This reminds me of an email I sent to you way back when, in late 2003 or early 2004, the email was an indirect response to a question asked by Helen Thomas in her syndicated column that basically asked, quote, if the president wants to know who leaked Valerie Plame's name to the press, why doesn't he just ask his staff to come clean? End quote. My response to Helen Thomas's question covered the following points. First, the president didn't need to ask because he already knew exactly who leaked the story. He did. Two, it is essential to keep in mind that there is no limit to the pettiness of Bush family members in general and to George W. specifically. Three, the reason he ordered it leaked had nothing whatsoever to do with Joe Wilson's editorial harming of the Bush crime family's rationale for war with Iraq, nor was it a direct attempt to intimidate others from leaking embarrassing and contradictory intelligence to the press. Remember, they knew they had no valid rationale, and they already had plans for dealing with critics. Ignore the critics. Bully the mainstream media. Stonewall, obfuscate, and ultimately deny, deny, deny. Four, so the question is, why were Joe Wilson and Valerie Plame punished by leaking her identity to the press? Think small. Think petty. What was the date that Joe Wilson's op-ed ran in the New York Times? July 6, 2003. Why is this specific date important? It was George W. Bush's 57th birthday. My contention is that Bush ordered the leak of Valerie Plame's name to the press because Joe Wilson's editorial screwed up Bush's birthday celebration. Just imagine the breakfast table on W's birthday. Instead of W being the glorious center of attention and adulation on his 57th birthday, he was instead the butt of family jokes, ridiculed by the rest of the Bush crime family after Poppy and Babs read the op-ed page in the New York Times at breakfast in Kennebunkport. I could be wrong. What do you think? Remember, though, if you want to understand the motivations of the Bush crime family, you need only keep in mind two things. One, their absolute and all-consuming greed, and two, their complete and utter vindictiveness. Have I mentioned yet tonight, Tom in Ann Arbor? Okay. that works for me. That works for me. We have a lot of stuff to cover tonight, but let's take a few phone calls here. Let's start with LaShonda's calling from Austin. Hey, LaShonda.
Hey, Mike. How you doing tonight?
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm okay. Did you get my email?
I didn't see a picture of the baby, but...
No, the email about Bush chasing the reporters in the tractor.
Yeah, well, I heard about that today. Yeah.
I don't know. Did you talk about that last night?
No. Kathy told me about it today, that he, when he was at that factory yesterday, he got on a Caterpillar factory. He got up on one of those huge machines and tried to run over the assembled press or something, right?
Oh, my goodness. What the hell? I was like, you know, he's certifiable. He could get a crazy check from SSI every month.
Oh, he could. He's entitled. It's horrific what this man is doing.
I mean, and to sit there and laugh about it. He yeah. thought it was funny. People, I was reading the story, they were like, one reporter was like, oh, my God, he's going to run us over or something like that. And the other one's like, move, here he comes. Yeah. Like he's some kind of, well, I guess he is some kind of killer. I don't know.
Well, he is that, but he's also a very dumb little man who has no life experience whatsoever. You know, I watched some of the video today where he was strutting around the floor of the New York Stock Exchange, and the reporters are talking about how, oh my goodness, he got a spontaneous applause from these people. Well, hell yeah, why wouldn't they give him spontaneous applause? Look what he's done for him. He's cut the taxes of the wealthy to the point they're practically non-existent. He's made sure that corporations don't have to pay anything. All they have to do is just make money and spend it. Why wouldn't they applaud this thug? He's just a very stupid man, isn't he?
It is insane, you know, the type of stuff that I see that the president, you know, is doing. And I'm like, I think back from my civics class. I don't remember James Madison hopping on a horse trying to run people down. You know what I'm saying? I'm just like, you know what? I'm going to have to get my Reverend Ike prayer hanky. I'm going to have to pray for him.
Yeah, God, you still have one of those?
It's handed down from my grandmama to my mama.
I was going to say, you know, he's still on television in, I think, in Philly, isn't he?
He is still on TV.
I think he's
catch Reverend Ike every now and again.
I think he's still on television, Reverend
yes.
Ike. Oh
yes,
my
I'm
God.
Just seeing George, and I'm like, Barbara, come get your crazy ass son. Mike, that's all I wanted to say.
All right. Thanks, LaShonda. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thanks for checking in.
Uh-huh.
All right. Oh, is that, what did he say, Kathy? I'm about to crank. You got the story there? What did he say?
I'd suggest moving back, he said, as he climbed into the cab of a massive D10 tractor. I'm about to crank this sucker up.
Crank this sucker up.
That's probably also what he says when he, you know, says bring him on and... You know, about sending troops on to Iraq. I'll crank it up.
Yeah, I
let's roll.
I think LaShonda's right. Somebody ought to, you know, call up Barbara Bush and say, come and get your boy, please.
Apparently there were news photographers yelling, get out of the way. I think he might run us over, said another one.
Yeah, well. All right, back to the phone calls here. Marge is calling from Indiana. Hey, Marge.
Hey there, how you doing?
I'm all right. How about you?
I think George is smoking some of those funny cigarettes again. I mean, the speech he made today, wherever the hell he was, about the recession was short and all the good jobs are still here and they're getting better pay and, you know, they're not raising any. Oh, geez.
Yeah, I know.
He's weird. But
well,
what I called about is to share a little collective tear for our friend Molly.
Yeah. Yeah.
It
was sad.
Is there any kind of a tree, any place that we can plant that will grow columnists that can write from the heart and from the gut and not get sidetracked by all this palaver?
I don't think so. Molly Ivins truly was unique.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the fact that she was a Texas gal. And I don't know what to say. I had two conversations with her in my entire life. One was on WLS. I don't know if you remember when back in 99 or 2000, I think it was right before she got her first cancer diagnosis.
Yeah, and I think she was scheduled to come back the second time that I was waiting for, and
uh-huh.
something happened, and she, I don't know, she had to go in for a second surgery
exactly.
or a second something or other.
Exactly.
And she never made it back, but
right.
Yeah.
She was on the program that one night. She had a book out, and we were just talking about it. And it just, She was one of those people, I swear to God, you've met people like this, where you meet them, and about 10 minutes after you met them, you feel like you've known them all your life.
Yeah, I remember the first book of hers that I read. It took me while I was into it, and she started talking, and she started writing in her Texas drawl. Wait a minute, and I had to back up, and it finally dawned on me what was going on. And I loved every word she's written ever since that I could find.
Yeah.
And they used to run her column in the Chicago Tribune on Thursdays. And then I guess she wasn't feeling so good because they start missing Thursdays. And I was getting mad at the Tribune, but I guess maybe it was her health that was holding her back. I think so.
Well,
it's just, I mean, 62, my God, is that young.
It is. It is. And you know, I know a lot of people are going to miss Molly Ivins.
When Ann Richards died, she wrote a hell of an obit or a tribute to her, and I'm wondering...
Who's going to write about Molly?
Yeah.
Well, John Nichols at The Nation, I think, already has something online.
I'll have to track that down. The only other Texan I was thinking of was... Jim Hightower, but
Hightower and Molly Ivins, my understanding is they were awfully close. So
maybe there'll be something there, but we got to look for a tree someplace that we can plant that will grow some writers that are good with words and are, you know, smart and funny and like that. Changing the subject just a tad, have you seen that commercial they're running, or are they doing it down in your neck of the woods, for Alberto VO5?
No, is that still around?
Yeah, it's still there. That greasy kid stuff, what can I tell you?
Hey, hold on a second. I'll come back to you for another minute, Marge. We got a break. This is Nova M Radio. I'm Mike Malloy.
But I will still be here. Simple things around the house. Maybe you'll think of me and smile. You know I'm tired to you like the buttons on your blouse. Keep me in your heart for a while.
It's about 10 before the hour.
Hi,
this is Nova M Radio. We're talking with Marge, who's called it from Indiana. All right, where were we,
Marge? Let me back
Marge?
Up just a tad before I finish off here.
Do what?
You're smart and funny and good with words, but you don't write them down. You talk them, so maybe you ought to start selling CDs.
Yeah, right. Okay.
But back to my Alberto VO5. There's a commercial running in these parts that's set in, I don't know what to call it, the Chinese school, where, you know, where they're wearing this uniform-like with the – they look like pajamas to me. I don't want to offend anybody, but anyway, and they're wearing like – sort of like a sailor suit with a big red tie, you know, underneath the collar. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, one boy.
Those are called, I think they still call them the Young Pioneers.
Okay. All right. I didn't know what to call them, and I didn't want to offend anybody. Uh-huh. Lord knows. But anyhow, they reach into their desk and they each get out their tube of Alberto VO5, and they come out with a punk hairdo. And they run them out of the classroom, and they're running away from the masters. And I thought, gee whiz, 1984 all over again. What's his name? Wilson?
Winston Smith?
Yeah, that guy.
Right. Okay.
Oh, if you see it, you'll chuckle, I'm sure.
Well, you just made me chuckle.
And there's a VCR, too. Check your PBS schedule. They're doing a 3-4 part thing on the Supreme Court. Sounds like it could be interesting.
All right, I'll do that.
All right, my friend.
All right,
don't work too hard.
I won't, Marge. Thank you very much. You have a
nice
evening. Okay, take care. Take care. Mina is calling from Nebraska. Hi, Mina.
Hi, Mike and Kathy. First of all, I'd like to say America lost a loving patriot today.
Yes, we did.
I want you to know that Central Nebraska Peace Workers is still out there pounding the pavement.
Good for you.
We had 8 people show up today, and it was probably 15 degrees. I don't know if you remember, but we're the group that had the guy drive off the road and not and run over one of our signs.
Oh, yeah.
About a year back.
I remember. I remember, Mina.
How the tide has turned. Most of the people today were positive. We had 2 women roll down their windows and yell, thank you for standing out and saying this in this cold weather.
Really?
I only had 1 bird.
and it wasn't a canary.
And it wasn't a canary. And then we had 2 people say, call us communists.
Oh, my God. Will people ever give up on that communist thing?
And one gal yelled back, no, I'm a Democrat.
Or you can yell back and say, no, I don't shop at Walmart.
There you go, because I don't shop at Walmart.
Well, try to find, not just Walmart, but try to find something that's not made in China. These people that are still hollering communists, do they not realize that the most populous nation on earth is still a communist nation, and we buy everything from them? And oh, never mind.
And we're totally indebted to them.
Totally, they own all of our IOUs. But you guys, for asking for peace, you're communist.
Yep.
Oh yeah.
Plus, I have a nice big flag that some distractors came and she wanted to trade my sign for her flag. So I made sure I carried my flag today.
I'll
and she has my sign that says Iraq had nothing to do with 9/11.
Huh.
And she said she was going to take it home and tear it up.
Oh, my goodness. Oh my goodness.
We just want you to know that we're still out there, and now we know that tonight we were there for Molly.
Well, good.
Okay.
That's good.
Thanks, Mom.
All right. Thank you, Mina. I appreciate you checking in. Joe is calling from Norwalk, Connecticut. Hey, Joe.
Hey, Mike Malloy. Wow, I'm a huge fan of your show. I'm 18. I'm a senior in high school, and I've been listening for a while. I think you were the best one on Air America, and they shouldn't have kicked you off.
I agree.
Yeah. And I wanted to also talk to you about something else I did last week. I write for my school newspaper, and I wrote an article about these military recruiters that always come to my cafeteria and stuff and talk to students, and these guys are really annoying and stuff, so I wrote this article, and I got mostly positive responses from it from my fellow students, and, the only negative response was from this ROTC drill sergeant who, today, I talked to him in the hallway, and he yelled at me and called my article bullshit and stuff.
No, you can't say that. I don't know why you can't say it, but you can't. But I appreciate you checking in, all right? We'll talk again. No, there's just certain words that that you can't say on the program. So we'll talk again though. All right, let me see. We're getting close to a break here anyway, aren't we? All right, if you're on hold, stick around. We'll take some more calls when we come back. We also have a couple more things I want to toss in the mix here. Something very intriguing. There was an inquest in the UK, British soldiers who were attacked by rogue U.S. warplanes. Makes you wonder, I'll tell you about it when we come back. Makes you wonder if they were really piloted by uniform U.S. military or by Blackwater. Also, some stuff here on Iran. The reason I want to bring it up is because it might shed some light on the 5 Americans that were killed by the so-called impersonators. The plane affair, Cheney's handwritten notes, implicates Bush even further into impeachable offenses. And some more stuff in your phone calls. So stick around. We'll have kind of a low-key program tonight, but entertaining and fun nonetheless. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.
Keep me in your heart for a while.
Welcome back. It is 7 past the hour. Email here from Philip in St. Louis. Mike, George Bush keeps making reference to winning and losing. In doing so, he appeals to our emotions and not our brains. Everyone wants to win. No one wants to lose. We have often asked him to define winning. What we need to do is define losing. If losing is having Iraq embroiled in a chaotic sectarian war that threatens to ignite the entire region, or having a new terrorist training ground that would threaten global peace for decades, or erosion of U.S. respect, integrity, and legitimate standing in the world community, then we have created it by our own actions. Increasing our level of interference will only multiply our losses in land where involvement is seen as illegitimate. The only thing left to lose by leaving is Mr. Bush's pride. Yeah, aren't you tired of it, huh? In this report, The Guardian of the UK, a group of British soldiers yesterday, on Tuesday, I believe, described at an inquest their frantic attempts to stop an attack on their convoy by what is referred to as rogue U.S. warplanes. When the bombing ended, one British soldier was dead, four were injured. Oxfordshire Coroner's Court heard that two U.S. A-10 planes opened fire on a patrol in southern Iraq, killing Lance Corporal Matty Hall 3 days before his 26th birthday. Yesterday, his colleagues told the court that the friendly fire incident had happened on a clear day as they patrolled an area about 30 miles northwest of Basra. And it goes on to describe this attack. Now, apparently nobody could communicate with anybody. The Brits couldn't communicate with American command. American command could not communicate with the people, allegedly American soldiers, who were about to bomb and strafe this British convoy. But it raises a very interesting question as far as I'm concerned. Who could it be that are flying these missions, that are invading these negotiations and kidnapping American soldiers? Bush wants us to believe it's Iranians. In this particular case, they're trying to find out who bombed and strafed the Brits. And no one will show up. Nobody from the American military command will provide the names of the pilots who were flying that day in that area, which is nonsense. I mean, these are not, we're not being asked to provide the names to the Iranian government or the Iraqi government. We're being asked to provide the names and the flight schedules to the British government, the only ally we have left over there. And there's a refusal to do it, which begs the question, could it be because there was no flight plan? There were no U.S. military flying that day. That it was private contractors. One of the things Blackwater brags about is their vast Air Force. They have their own Air Force. In addition to 20,000 hired or paid killers, they have their own Air Force. So not providing flight logs or any information or the names of the American crew members involved leads me, anyway, to question, well, is that because there weren't Americans, service members involved, that this was a truly a rogue operation by this filthy Blackwater group? Could that be? Could the five Americans who were kidnapped, one shot dead on the site and four taken away and executed, and, you know, where the people showed up looking like Americans, talking like Americans, American ID, American vehicles, but they weren't Americans, and now Bush and the sleaze machine, starting with the pig man, Limbaugh, wants everybody in this country to believe that these were Iranians. So here we go again. You see, it's the Iranians that did it. Stock market goes down 20 points. It's the Iranians. Somebody gets killed. It's the Iranians. Anything bad happens now, it's going to be the Iranians. Could have been a Blackwater operation. We brought this up last week when it occurred. Why, of course it could be. I don't know. And then this, and then I'm going to come back to your phone calls. This is at Huffington Post, Brent Budowski. He writes, the Democratic leaders made their first major mistake, and that is agreeing to bipartisan Iraq group. Today, Bush is one of the most dangerous men in the world, with an Iraq policy in collapse, escalating the mistakes that led to failure and catastrophic loss of public support. He is considering another preemptive war against Iran. For Democratic leaders to agree to a sham bipartisan group sends a radically dangerous signal to Bush and Cheney. These two will conclude, rightly or wrongly, that Congress lacks the will to resist whatever moves he makes. What he's writing about is the Democratic leadership, as reported in the Washington Post today, agreed to Bush's idea for a new bipartisan panel to advise him on the fight against terrorism and the Iraq War. How long has it been since he rejected the recommendations of the last panel, right? The president proposed the panel earlier this month when he announced his plan to send 21,000 more troops to Iraq. Bush said January 10th in a primetime speech, this group will meet regularly with me and my administration will help strengthen our relationship with Congress. Democrats quickly opposed the plan. A January 19 letter from Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid said, quote, we believe that Congress already has bipartisan structures in place that could produce the result you described in your speech. So a senior Democratic leadership aide said yesterday that Bush had wanted to dictate the terms of the panel and even select the Democratic Party members. So yesterday, Bush spoke with Pelosi and Reid, and they agreed to create a panel to which Democrats could appoint their own members. A Pelosi spokesman said, quote, they had a very good conversation today. It was a very promising start, end quote. White House spokeswoman Dana Perino said in a statement, quote, the president had a good phone conversation with Senator Reid and Senator Speaker Pelosi this afternoon, end quote. The panel's initial meeting is set for next week. I'm not supposed to criticize the Democratic Party leadership, not yet. But as Brent Budkowski writes, it's dangerous. It is a dangerous mistake for Democrats to give any pretense of bipartisanship to a policy rooted in the extremism of escalating Iraq on one hand and threatening Iran on the other while rejecting all diplomacy. And two, Democrats should preferably withdraw from this so-called bipartisan group. And if they must proceed, they should name Mirtha Kennedy and Feingold as part of the group. And three, Democrats should reiterate that any attack on Iran without prior authorization by Congress would be a violation of the Constitution and the War Powers Law and would therefore be illegal. That's what they should do. I don't quite get this. Do you? Does anybody have any ideas why Pelosi and Reid would agree with this killer, this psychopath, this nutcase, this man who has violated his oath of office and should be impeached, but Pelosi and Reid have agreed to sit down and have a bipartisan committee to talk about Iraq? What the hell is going on? Oh, I know, I'm not supposed to. And now it appears that Bush also has committed another impeachable offense in the CIA leak case. Your phone calls when we come back. I'm Mike Molloy. This is Nova M. Gun aiming for the truth. They got a silencer and aiming straight at the youth. And all they talk of terrorism's nothing but a spoof. Hip to your games, hip to the science of war. Propaganda make me fight, but what am I fighting for? My way of life, means and rights, give or take less or more. See through the eyes of the poor, plus I'm black to the core. Ignorance is on tour, looking statements and more. The days of Hitler painted pictures, patriotic before. You raise a flag on a land, snatch on board Eagle's floor. And send a symbol on your currency to finance your war. I'm saying no, not in my name, not in my life. Not for my hands, that ain't my fight, not in my name. You wage a war against terrorists and violence, and try to wave your guns of fear of sword in the silence. No, not in my name, not in my life, not by my hands, that ain't my fight.
Doing talk radio right from the left, it's More of Mike Molloy.
Past the hour. I got this email from Bob in Miami. He says, Mike, an outraged caller who knew, this is about the five murdered GIs, an outraged caller who knew the murdered soldier's name on Tom Hartman's program today claimed that one of the five murdered American kids had recently been very vocal about the fiasco that is Iraq. He spoke out, emailed a congressman or something. I can't verify that, but would it surprise you? Maybe one of your listeners knows more about it. No, that wouldn't surprise me at all. The Bush crime family is devoid of anything that could be considered human. All members of the Bush crime family. And to order the execution of American soldiers for either speaking out or because they need a casus belli with Iran. This is how the Bush administration, the Bush family, the Bush crime family, this is how they operate. The lives of five or six American soldiers or 500 American soldiers or 5,000 American soldiers means nothing to Bush, nothing to any member of the Bush crime family. And what's this? I heard that Negroponte was unanimously approved for his job of deputy secretary of state. Does nobody remember what Negroponte did in Central America in the 80s? And once again, we had Democratic senators appraising him and saying no one in government had as much experience as he does. How can these people do that? These people being members of Congress, especially Democrats. How does that happen? It's scary. All right, back to your phone calls. Toby is calling from San Francisco. Toby, welcome to the program. Hey, Toby. Toby's not there? Hey, Toby, you can try again. Michelle is calling from San Antonio, Texas. Hey, Michelle.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
I'm okay. Listen, just a little bit about the Pelosi-Reid thing. Keep your friends close and your enemies closer.
Yeah, that's not the truth.
Well, I'm thinking, I'm praying that that's what it is.
I guess so. I have to have some faith, I guess.
Well, it's hard. It's difficult. I mean, especially when you get as much information as you get. You're constantly having to sift through it and keep your feelings out of it as much as you can so that you can keep it on, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I sent you an email. I posted today on a soldier suicide. Now, I'm married to an air physician, an active duty physician,
mm-hmm.
and I know for a fact that these aren't counted as part of the, it's not in the casualty count.
The suicides.
And, yeah, mm-hmm. none of them. And, I mean, I actually just read a report on it. Suicides are up 400%. This is a report that's issued by the DOD that goes out to physicians.
Yeah.
And that's kind of a shocking number. Anyway, so my site is, you know, Deep Confusion, and it's I put it up there. It's just, it breaks my heart because he showed up at a VA hospital and he said, I'm suicidal. They didn't
have
room for him.
I just read about this, didn't I? You sent it to me?
I did. I just sent it to you, yeah.
Okay, that was, you sent it within the past couple of days.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did read that. Was that in the Texas, Dallas paper? Or
Minnesota.
Minneapolis Star, I think.
Actually, it was the Rochester paper.
Oh, Rochester, Minnesota.
Rochester,
okay.
Minnesota, yeah.
Yeah, I did read that. He had asked, he had showed up, he'd asked for help. They told him there was, they couldn't see him now, and then he hanged himself.
Well, yeah, the thing is that, you know, he went in the next day, too. They put him on the list. He was 26th on the list, and he went in the next day. They couldn't see him, and 4 days later, he was dead.
And well, if there is any justice left anywhere in the universe, Michelle, eventually, I don't know. Eventually, it'll be justice will out. I guess I don't know anymore. God, I don't even know what I'm saying. All right, Michelle, thanks.
I'm so glad you guys are back.
Me too.
I can't tell you. Thank you, Mike.
Thank you, Michelle. All right, take care.
Bye bye.
We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy.
Can't walk you out in no morning dew. But I heard a young man cry.
Faces bright and early for the daily races, going nowhere.
There are some who feel like that, you know, the conditions are such that they can attack us there. My answer is bring them on.
No expression. Hide my head, I wanna drown.
25 before the hour. We haven't done an Uncle Mike Story Corner for a while, and I think it's time we have one of the features of this program that we occasionally indulge in. Hey, good evening, kiddies. Everybody comfy and cozy? Got your jammies on? Nice cup of hot chocolate and maybe a marshmallow or two floating on top, those little tiny marshmallows. Well, sit around close to your neighbor, snuggle up a little bit, and we're going to have tonight's edition of Uncle Mike's Story Corner. The story is by Douglas Herman, and it's entitled Day One the war with Iran. The war began as planned. The Israeli pilots took off well before dawn and streaked across Lebanon and northern Iraq, high above Kirkuk. Flying U.S.-made F-15s and F-16s, the Israelis separated over the mountains of western Iran, the pilots gesturing a last-minute show of confidence in their mission, maintaining radio silence. Just before the sun rose over Tehran, moments before the Muslim call to prayer, the missiles struck their targets. While U.S. Air Force AWACS planes circled overhead, listening, watching, recording, heavy U.S. bombers followed minutes later. Bunker busters and mini nukes fell on dozens of targets while Iranian anti-aircraft missiles sped skyward. The ironically named Bushehr nuclear power plant crumbled to dust. Russian technicians and foreign nationals scurried for safety. Most did not make it. Targets in Sagand and Yazd, all of them carefully chosen many months before by Pentagon planners, were destroyed. The uranium enrichment facility at Natanz, a heavy water plant and radioisotope facility at Arak, the Ardakan nuclear fuel unit, the uranium conversion facility and nuclear technology center in Isfahan were struck simultaneously by U.S. Air Force and Israeli bomber groups. The Tehran Nuclear Research Center, the Tehran molybdenum, iodine, and xenon radioisotope production facility, the Tehran Jaber Ibn Hayyan Multipurpose Laboratories, the Kalai Electric Company, all were destroyed. Iranian fighter jets rose in scattered groups, at least those Iranian fighter planes that had not been destroyed on the ground by swift and systematic airstrikes from U.S. and Israeli missiles. A few Iranian fighters even launched missiles, downing the occasional attacker, but American top guns quickly prevailed in the ensuing dogfights. The Iranian Air Force, like the Iranian Navy, never really knew what hit them. Like the slumbering U.S. sailors at Pearl Harbor, the pre-dawn preemptive attack wiped out fully half the Iranian defense forces in a matter of hours. By mid-morning, the second and third wave of U.S. and Israeli raiders screamed over the secondary targets. The only problem now, the surprising effectiveness of the Iranian missile defenses. The element of surprise lost, U.S. and Israeli warplanes began to fall from the skies in considerable numbers to anti-aircraft fire. At 7:30 a.m. Tehran time, the first Iranian anti-ship missile destroyed a Panamanian oil tanker departing from Kuwait and bound for Houston. Launched from an Iranian fighter plane, the Exocet missile split the ship in half and set the ship ablaze in the Strait of Hormuz. A second and third tanker followed, black smoke billowing from the broken ships before they blew up and sank. By 8:15 a.m., all ship traffic on the Persian Gulf had ceased. U.S. Navy ships ordered earlier into the relative safety of the Indian Ocean, south of their base in Bahrain, launched counterstrikes. Waves of U.S. fighter planes circled the burning wrecks in the bottleneck of Hormuz, but the Iranian fighters had fled. At 9 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, many hours into the war, CNN reported a squadron of suicide Iranian fighter jets attacking the U.S. Navy fleet south of Bahrain. Embedded reporters aboard the ships, sending live feeds directly to a rapt audience of Americans just awakening, reported all of the Iranian jets destroyed, but not before the enemy planes launched dozens of Exocet and Sunburn anti-ship missiles. A U.S. aircraft carrier, a cruiser, and two destroyers suffered direct hits. The cruiser blew up and sank, killing 600 men. The aircraft carrier sank an hour later. By mid-morning, every military base in Iran was partially or wholly destroyed. Sirens blared and fires blazed from hundreds of fires. Explosions rocked Tehran, and the electrical power failed. The Al Jazeera news station in Tehran took a direct hit from a satellite bomb, leveling the entire block. At 9:15 a.m., Baghdad time, the first Iranian missile struck the green zone. For the next 30 minutes, a torrent of missiles landed on GPS coordinates carefully selected by Shiite militiamen with cell phones, positioned outside the Green Zone and other permanent U.S. bases. Although U.S. and Israeli bombers had destroyed 90% of the Iranian missiles, enough Shahabs remained to fully destroy the Green Zone, the Baghdad airport, and a U.S. Marine base. Thousands of unsuspecting U.S. soldiers died in the early morning barrage. Not surprisingly, CNN and Fox withheld the great number of casualties from American viewers. By 9:30 a.m., gas stations on the U.S. East Coast began to raise their prices. Slowly at first, and then altogether in a panic, the prices rose. $4 a gallon, then $5, then $6. The prices skyrocketed. Worried motorists rushing from work roared into the nearest gas station, radios blaring the latest reports of the preemptive attack on Iran. While fistfights broke out in gas stations everywhere, the third Middle Eastern war had begun. In Washington, D.C., the spin began minutes after the first missile struck its intended target. The punitive strike, not really a war, said the White House spokesman, would further democracy and peace in the Middle East. Media pundits mostly followed the party line. By ridding Iran of weapons of mass destruction, Robert Gates declared confidently on CNN, Iran might follow the footsteps of Iraq and enjoy the hard-won fruits of freedom. The president scheduled a speech at 2 p.m. Gas prices rose another $2 before then. China and Japan threatened to dump U.S. dollars. Gold rose $120 an ounce. The dollar plummeted against the euro. CNN reported violent anti-American protests in Paris, London, Rome, Berlin, and Dublin. Fast food franchises throughout Europe carrying American corporate logos were firebombed. A violent coup toppled the pro-American Pakistan president. On the New York Stock Exchange, prices fell in a frenzy of trading, except for the major petroleum producers. A single Iranian Shahab missile struck Tel Aviv, destroying an entire city block. Israel vowed revenge and threatened a nuclear strike on Tehran before a hastily called UN General Assembly in New York eased tensions. An orange alert in New York City suddenly reddened to a full-scale terror alarm when a package detonated on a Manhattan subway. Mayor Bloomberg declared martial law. Governor Spitzer ordered the New York National Guard fully mobilized, mobilizing what few National Guardsmen remained in the state. President Bush looked shaken at 2 p.m. The scroll below the TV screen reported Persian Gulf nations halting production of oil until the conflict could be resolved peacefully. Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez announced a freeze in oil deliveries to the U.S. would begin immediately. Tony Blair offered to mediate peace negotiations between the U.S. and Israel and Iran, but was resoundingly rejected. By 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, gas prices had stabilized at just below $10 a gallon. A Citgo station in Texas near Fort Sam Houston Army Base was firebombed. Nobody claimed responsibility. Terrorism was not ruled out. At sunset, the call to prayer in Tehran, Baghdad, Islamabad, Ankara, Jerusalem, Jakarta, and Riyadh sounded uncannily like the buzzing of enraged bees. Uncle Mike's Story Corner for this, the last day of January 2007. Day one, The War with Iran by Douglas Herman, a United States Air Force veteran and a contributor at Rens.com. Back to your phone calls. As soon as we... Is it time for another break? We have to do a break here. Oh, my goodness. All right, we're about to take a break. We're going to take Scott. Scott, you're up next when we come back. And Sanchez and Terry and Elliot and Bob. And I guess that's all the lines, right? All right, stick around. This is Nova M Radio. I'm Mike Malloy.
I've seen the nations rise and fall. I've heard their stories, heard them all. But love's the only of survival. Your servant here, he has been told to say it clear, to say it cold. It's over, it ain't going any further. And now the wheels of heaven stop. You feel the devil's riding crop. Get ready for the future. It is murder.
Slide. Slide in all directions.
Won't be nothing.
guns hung at his hips.
Got the Flying Monkey Right blues? Here's the cure, Mike Malloy.
He stopped and walked into a bar, laid his money down. But his mother's words echoed again. Don't take your guns to town, son. Leave your guns at home, Bill.
It's about 9 before the hour. Back to your phone call. Scott is calling from Federal Way, Washington. Scott, welcome to the program.
You know, it's kind of odd because some of those same scenarios that you were reading in that story Randy Rhodes was talking about on her show a few months ago when the striker, the Eisenhower, over there in October was over there and she was talking about some of those same, very same things happening.
Yeah.
And I remember Scott Ritter a year and a half ago, and he was a call-in guest on a local talk show here was talking about that's the next thing that they were ramping up to do was to go to Iran because of that. So, you know, it's just very eerie to hear those.
Yeah, it is. And I think Doug's story that I read, Day One, the War with Iran, that was written by Doug Herman. And you can find it at rense.com, R-E-N-S-E.com. He's got it nailed. I mean, what is going to happen in terms of the repercussions around the planet when the U.S. and Israel launch this attack? I mean, the writer really does have it nailed. This is exactly what's going to happen. It's going to be horrifying.
There's some sick people running this country. I don't know what else to say about that.
I know.
But what I was going to talk about kind of just briefly was the fact that all of this is coming out now about these contractors and stuff and all this money that's disappeared over there.
Yeah, isn't it funny to hear everybody act surprised? And that's another thing that we've been talking about on this program. I know Randy's been talking about it. I know Barkop's been talking about it. I know you've been aware of it. I mean, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to know that we have been stolen blind by not just by Americans, although the Americans certainly have stolen their fair share, but also by contractors from around the world. It's just been an absolute money pot for people.
And that money isn't even counted in the budget to begin with.
No, hell no. This is Bush's giveaway to the people who insist. War is wonderful to these people. These people love war. It's nothing but pure profit.
Oh, yeah, when you're Halliburton and Kellogg Brown and all those people. Yeah,
sure. It's just a never-ending a source of money and profit and whoop-de-doo and fun. And who gets killed? Ah, well, you know, that's the way it goes. And our people think that they are fighting for truth and justice in the American way. I get so goddamn mad sometimes I can't even think straight.
And one last thing I was going to mention real quick. Remember you had kind of at the start, they asked me about my neck of the woods, about them not showing that inconvenient truth.
Yeah, yeah.
I live, and I didn't really get to it now. I hadn't really been following the story. I looked at a little something on the Huffington Post. But, you know, that kind of does not surprise me out here because I know we had some issue a few years ago about book banning. There were some books that they didn't want in the Federal Way school system. And then I remember about maybe 12 or 13 years ago, there was an issue of some kids that were attacked. It was either in a high school or a grade school or something. And you know what the board solution was, what they wanted to do?
No.
They wanted to provide taser guns for kids to take to school to defend themselves.
Oh, Jesus, God.
I am very serious. And then I had some friends out here that told me that they took their kids out of the school system and decided to homeschool because it just seemed like that the rowdy kids were getting all the attention and the ones that were in there to try to learn that, you know, they were just struggling to try to survive. So it doesn't surprise me that that kind of stuff comes out of here.
I saw a follow up story or that reality raised so much shock around the country that now I believe the bottom line on the story is the school board there decided to go ahead and allow teachers to show it if they wanted to. Now, I'm not sure if that's the last word. These dominionists, these fundamentalists, I don't care if they're Christian or Muslim, are just determined to keep as many people utterly ignorant as possible.
And what's the counterpoint they want to show? And culture guys, excuse me?
Well, there isn't. What counterpoint do you show to science? What's the counterpoint? I mean, let's have somebody come on there and talk about how gravity is this force in nature that nobody truly understands how it works, and then we'll have a countervailing argument that says, well, there is no gravity. It's just a liberal plot to focus attention away from Jesus.
Or let's have a counterpoint that says 2 + 2 = 5.
I mean, are what? People are what?
2 + 2 = 5. I mean, how stupid is that kind of stuff? I mean, you know, these are proven facts.
And this is
the result, and this is why we have kids that are so dumbed down in the school system. I mean, it's just pathetic.
It is. It is indeed. All right. Listen, thanks for checking in, Scott. I appreciate it. Take care, man. Sanchez is calling from Montebello, California. Hey, Sanchez.
Ah, good evening, Mike. How are you?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
I was kind of saddened to hear the news of Molly Ivins this evening. I hadn't had the radio on, so when I clicked on to your program, I was truly bummed about that.
Yeah.
I know that Marge earlier was talking about planting, young trees to replace her, but Ivins was like a wise old oak, so it's going to take a long time to grow a wisdom tree like that, you know?
It is. Hey, you want to hold on?
Sure.
All right, let me put you back on hold, and we'll come to you right after the break. We pause here. What did they used to say? We pause here for station identification. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is the Nova M Radio Network. Welcome back. 7 past the hour. We were talking with Sanchez in Montebello, California. Sanchez, thanks for holding on. Welcome back.
Sure thing, Mike. We were talking about Molly Ivins right now and her passing. And the reason why I wanted to call in was to let you know, well, I do want to honor her memory by letting you know about how I took her last article, the words in her last article, to heart. Early in the program, you were reading them back to us. And do you recall the part where she was saying about reaching out to the troops and showing your direct support to them?
Yes.
Okay. After reading that, almost by coincidence, also on, I heard an interview on Democracy Now with an active duty soldier that was stationed there in Iraq. Amy Goodman was talking to Sergeant Ron Cantu. He started a forum. He was one of the people that signed the appeal of redress, which was submitted to Congress directly from the troops.
Right.
He started a forum which is called soldiervoices.net.
Mm-hmm.
And since that time, I've become like a media watchdog there, and I've been, offering information concerning the redress. I've been reading all this wonderful historical background about the Middle East And I've been reading personal stories about the soldiers as well. And I think I kind of hit the Mike Molloy Show Daily Double here, because you were talking earlier about the Black Hawk crash and about the personnel that were involved in that. Mm-hmm. The name of the soldier that you were asking about, the one that had an issue, his name is actually Victor Langarica. And what had happened with him was he had served before in Afghanistan. He was nearly killed there. He had one tour, and then he was redeployed back to Iraq. And I have a quote here directly from SoldierVoices.net from his mother, Pearl Lucas. And Pearl recalled this by saying, this is Victor talking, "I don't understand why Bush is doing this to us. If I die, I won't know why I died, if it was for oil or for revenge."
Oh,
now,
God.
Yeah, so those are his words. I have the names here of I think it's the 12 people that were involved in the crash. So all this information is available at soldiervoices.net. This is basically, like I say, I've been doing my part. I've been trying to turn my anger into something positive. So I've been contributing to their blog and again, offering information. I've actually given you a plug on there as well. So, you know.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
What's the site again? I'll do it slow so people can write it down.
Okay. It is soldiervoices.net. It's a forum for both us regular citizens and soldiers from all walks of the military. And we're basically there. We're all of a like mind that basically we know what needs to be done, and mm-hmm. we're just sharing all this wonderful information. And again, the main guy there is Ron Cantu, but you can read his story, and it reads like my brother's story. So it all clicks in. So again, I wanted to relay that because Molly is, not to use the cliche, was an institution, but I did take her words to heart. And I did follow through with something. So there are people out there that we're reading and we are listening.
That's good. That's great. That's great. Sanchez, you make me proud to have you as a listener. Take care, okay?
Thank you. You too. Bye-bye.
All right. All right. Of course, that's true with so many people that listen to this program. But honest to God, now that Sanchez evoked that comment out of me, when we finish the program up every night at midnight, Kathy and I have a glass of wine to kind of unwind and kind of review the program. What we saw as the strong points, you know, like when you do theater and after a performance, the cast sits down and the director gives you your notes for that night's performance. And we try to objectively look at the good points of that night's program and the weak spots and where we might have done well and where we did crappy and so on and so forth. But invariably, we talk about the people who called in, or the people not on that given night, but people who call this program, people who email this program, people who stay in touch through this program with us. And it's astonishing how many people do something. Like Sanchez just said, you know, immediately think about Sarge. But there's so many people, and some of them are big things that they do, and some are little things that they do. But this audience that has hung with us for God, 6-7 years through all sorts of incarnations, and it's obviously it's gotten bigger as we move from working at a radio station to a kind of a toy network, i.e. America, and then on to Air America, and now to Nova M. The audience has grown and gotten bigger, but still, I'm absolutely stunned at the activism. The people, we had a caller earlier tonight from a woman in Nebraska who gets together with her friends, 6, 7, 8 people every single Wednesday night, I believe she said, street corner demonstration to end the war. Invariably, it doesn't make any difference. Rain, snow, sleet, doesn't matter. You know, little things like that that just reverberate and ricochet around this country. You know, being an atheist doesn't mean you don't believe in the power of a positive movement or positive energy. Of course, Of course I believe in that. And when I think of the little things that I mean, little in the scope of the world, this program is a little program. Little things that Molly Ivan's column was a little thing. It was one woman sitting in front of a typewriter and banging out 2-3 columns a week. Little things. Peter Werbe has a program that's only on Sunday night in one market in Detroit. It just goes on and on like this. Those little things that I think that's what we mean. Some people email me and say, "What do you mean by keep it lit?" When you sig out on the program every night, and I think that's exactly what I mean. Keep those little things lit. But Kathy and I will invariably, the conversation will get back to the connection that exists out there, and how many people do something who listen to this program. And again, it's never a big thing, but it's just hundreds and thousands of these little things that just grow and grow and send that positive wave, energy wave, whatever you want to call it. But it's very humbling to us to realize that that's what folks who listen to this program do, just like Sanchez. What? You're looking at me. Was I getting preachy? I'm sorry. I don't do that a lot. Mostly I scream. All right. Okay. I'm taking your next call. Kathy's sitting out there pointing. Bob is calling from Tennessee. Bob, welcome to the program.
Hello, Mike. I'm out of breath chasing you through the ionosphere.
Yeah, I guess you would be.
And I've been here since your little Molly was just a wish.
Yeah, yeah, I remember. You're our poet from Tennessee.
That's right. Listen, Mike, two things on my mind. I had a Buffalo Springfield moment the other day. I was listening on C-SPAN to the Mayor's Conference on Climate Change.
Yeah.
Ed Markey of Massachusetts gave a speech, and there were two technical difficulty ellipses in his speech. And
yeah.
The announcer acknowledge them with an apology. They were the most vital part, most important, challenging points of his talk. And I just had a paranoid flash. I'd like somebody that has access to check that out.
Can you hold? Let me put you on hold a second, Bob, because we've got to do a commercial break here. And we'll pick it up. Don't lose your train of thought. We'll pick it up right there when we come back. This is Nova M. I'm Mike Malloy.
That you don't know what you got till it's gone. You'd be in paradise and put up a fucking line.
Soothing bedtime lullaby. It's Mike Malloy.
Twenty-one past the hour. Back to Bob the Poet in Tennessee. Where were we, Bob?
Well, I was just finishing up the first thing. The second thing is more important. You know, we often hear about Iraq being a training ground for terrorists.
Right.
We need to consider that it's also a training ground for U.S. generals.
Yeah, right.
It's a training ground in urban pacification.
Yes.
And these generals are leaving the service by the droves and going to work for Floor and Blackwater.
Yeah.
And these other corporate armies.
Pretty scary.
Hey, are we going to have to fight them over here instead of over there?
I know.
Blackwater? What are these? This is a Christianist head of Blackwater, you know?
Yeah, he's one of those dominionist types who figures that the best way to please the Prince of Light, Jesus Christ, is to kill as many non-believers or Muslims or Jews eventually or atheists or whatever as you possibly can, because Jesus to these people just loves blood, as much of it as he can frolic around on or in is very pleasing. That's what these people believe.
Yeah.
It is beyond degenerate and sick. I don't know what it is. It's like they're not human, these people. I don't know.
Well, you know, if we take a longer view, Mike, and we look at the general picture of the United States, okay, the factory jobs go, and then the white-collar jobs are outsourced, and then they import foreign slave labor, and then the Americans only have World Cup. And so the world police force for the corporate fascism becomes the Americans because, I mean, we can't trust foreigners to do that.
Right.
And the only job left for our young people, military service, protecting the corporations.
All right, I'm going to go kill myself now.
No, don't do that.
No, I'm not ever. But I know it's like the plot of a bad sci-fi movie. I don't know. Only it's not fictional.
I know, that's what's weird. Listen, I've got to ask, even though it's kind of personal, because I, you know, they're messing with our mail as well as our telephones now, and I've been sending you. Through the U.S. Post Office, poems, several, many, over the months, and the photo poster of Stop War, did you get it?
Yeah, I get everything that people email to me. It's just impossible.
No, I'm not emailing.
I don't mean, no, not email, but a P.O. box. You've been sending it to Decatur, Georgia, P.O. box. I've been getting everything that people send to me. It's just utterly and absolutely impossible to respond, even to say, hey, I got your package. It just is.
Oh, well, I don't mean for a response. I just want to make sure you're a response.
Oh, I'm getting it. And I just always say to people, please keep sending. It doesn't mean we don't get when you don't hear anything back from us. And of course, a lot of it I just blame on a little 2.5-year-old Molly. She is such a demand for time for both Kathy and me that's my excuse. That's kind of the blanket excuse for everything that I either don't have time to do right now or
No, Mike. No, that's not an excuse. That's a reason.
Yeah, that's true.
And she deserves you more than I do.
Wow.
And I am not at all offended. And
well,
you carry on and give her a big kiss.
I'll do it. Thanks, Bob. Thanks for calling. And keep the mail coming, pal. Simon in the UK sent me the link to the front page of Norwegian, I guess it's Oslo newspaper, the Aftenposten. Aftenposten, the English version. This is from Oslo, Norway. The Al Gore has been nominated by two members of the Norwegian Parliament, which is how this works, for the Nobel Peace Prize, a share of the Nobel Peace Prize. Al Gore and a woman named Sheila Watt Cloutier, who is an Inuit, a Native American Inuit. I guess she's Native American. She may not be Native American, but she's Inuit. And they are nominated for their... Sheila Watt Cloutier is a Canadian Inuit. She's been one of the leaders for years of the Inuit Circumpolar Conference, focusing on the rapid warming taking place in the Arctic. And, of course, you know why Al Gore was nominated. So President Gore has been nominated to share in the Nobel Prize, Peace Prize, by two members of the Norwegian Parliament. We'll be back after the break.
The way I'm receiving you, it seems you're deceiving the mass majority. Make way for P Dog, the Bush killer, cop killer, black urban gorilla. Because without justice, I'll bust until it's released. And only then is the time for peace.
Hey, truth seekers, it's time for your humble and obedient servant, more of Mike Malloy.
It's about 25 before the hour. Terry is calling from Springfield, Ohio. Terry, welcome to the program. Thanks for holding on.
Hey, Mike. It's great hearing that voice from the northeast quadrant of the Ohio, or Buckeye State again.
Yeah.
On the airwaves. Yeah. My whole thing is, what you're talking about earlier with Nancy Pelosi and...
Harry Reid.
Harry Reid. You know, Roosevelt and Truman gave that family a pass in the 1940s.
The Bush family, yeah.
Yeah, it is time to take them out like the Romanovs. Just go Red Russian on them, take them out from Jenna to the smallest sibling to the oldest one, Barbara.
Now, you're referring, obviously, to legally and peacefully and like impeachment or... like charging them with crimes. You have to be careful.
Well,
you have to be careful of how you say things in the age of Bush. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Oh, I understand what you're saying. And,
okay.
I just thought it was kind of funny how he bought, 100,000 acres in Uruguay, Papa Bush? You know, so, I mean, he's obviously thinking, you know, the people are getting a little... funny with this stuff that's been going on for the last 20 years, and they've basically been in control of the country for 20 years, and that's the reason I have questions about Hillary Clinton with her husband cozying up to Papa Bush so much. So it's
yeah, I don't like to see that sort of thing either, but something that was even more of an outrage to me was when the new Congress was sworn in and Hillary is being sworn in by Dick Cheney, and Hillary and Bill and Dick Cheney are standing there laughing and slapping each other on the back and playing a little bit of political grab ass there that just, just made me nervous. I just don't like to see it. Well, you know, when I have an enemy, I'm a good enemy because I'll hate your ass until I'm dead. You know what I'm saying? I just once you're my enemy, screw you. I don't want anything to do with you. I'm not going to stand have my picture taken with you. I'll talk about you behind your back. I'll accuse your mama of being a street whore. I am a fierce enemy.
Well, maybe we're bad politicians, though, isn't it? And the prince for keep your enemies close.
Right.
And
now keep your friends close and your enemies closer.
Closer, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, I know that makes sense, but I'm not a very sensible guy. I'm
not either, Mike. So.
I'm sort of insane half the time. All right, listen, thanks. I'm glad you checked in, Terry. We'll talk again. All right, take care. Yeah, listen, I understand everybody's passion. God knows I've got it too. Just you've got to be cool in how you present some of this stuff, though. This program is monitored. Every single word that we say on this program is closely monitored and recorded. We know this to be absolute fact. It has nothing to do with paranoia or nothing to do with this is a popular program. No, it has to do with the Bush crime family monitors every single word on every single talk radio program, but especially the ones that are perceived to be straying away from the party line. Which we certainly do. But every single program on Air America, every single program on Nova M, every single program that may be left-leaning out there, websites, everything is monitored now and watched. And you just have to, I implore you to be careful of your language. You say something like, take out somebody, and that has a specific meaning. To the to the Blackwater tribe and to the Bush crime family. So you have to be cool. You have to be cool, all right? Or you'll get a visit from the people with the little microphones on their lapels, and so will we. And language is very dangerous to the Bush crime family. They don't understand language because they're such illiterate bastards. But when they hear other people using language, it's not going to have any of that. All right, enough said. Elliot is calling from Illinois. Elliot, thanks for holding on.
Yeah. How you doing, Mike?
I'm doing fine. How are you, sir?
Good. Oh, pretty good. It's good to have you back on Sirius. It was a very lonely time here at nights when you went over to XM.
I know. Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah. It makes me happy when I've got something like I can laugh a lot and feel good about. I'm calling about that Karbala situation where the guys supposedly got into the base somehow.
Yeah, they got past the checkpoints, right?
Right. Well, there was a captain who died there. I don't quite remember. I think his name was Freeman.
Mm-hmm.
He was, somewhere around the end of last year, got a chance to go home and see his kid and his wife. And he was able to... He went over and introduced himself to Christopher Dodd and John
mm-hmm.
Kerry,
mm-hmm.
who happened to be also leaving Baghdad and going home from one of those trips that the Congress people take.
Right.
And that's where he started making his views known about what was going on in Iraq. His name was bandied about quite liberally in Washington, by those two Congress members. And, he died in that situation and left his family. That I just wanted to add that part of the little story that he was, very vocal, very opposed to the war. There may even be details which I haven't passed on to you right now. And I think it's very interesting that he would die under those circumstances. I don't know if he was the target or not. My most conspiratorial hairs on the back of my neck rose when I heard that. Because for a long time, not that I have any love lost for the extremist Islamists, but if you listen to them, one of the things they've said about the U.S. military is that there's a right-wing cabal within the military, which is their real enemy.
I think that cabal that a lot of us know about is a real enemy of the American people too.
Yeah, I it wouldn't surprise me at all. I just wanted to make sure that you understand I don't have any love lost for those people.
Right.
But I do try and listen to what they say, because that tells you a lot about what could be going on, if you're not, being manipulated. And of course, you never know if you are or not. But, I just wanted to let you know about that captain, because I think any military personnel who are taking a stand are taking a big risk. I certainly think that they are real patriots in doing so.
Well, I appreciate your comments, Elliot. Thanks a lot for checking in. Okay.
All right, Mike.
All right. Take care. Yeah, we're all supposed to believe that these incidences, like Elliot just described, are just sheer coincidence. It's just absolutely sheer coincidence. 130,000 U.S. troops in Iraq, and five of them are murdered by ? And one of them happens to be one of the outspoken critics in uniform of this crime family and what they're doing there. But it's all just coincidence. Matt is calling from Washington, D.C. Matt, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike, how are you doing?
I'm doing all right. How about you?
All right. I spoke to you a couple of weeks ago. I was telling you about Yellow Cakewalk, our website. Did you ever get a chance to check that out?
Give it to me again, because I don't think I did.
Okay, it's yellowcakewalk.net.
Yellowcakewalk.net?
Yeah, we're at the, I'm sorry, .org.
.org. Yellow.
Well, I'm having drawing a blank here. I'm sorry. It's yellowcakewalk.net.
Okay, yellow. All right, now, which is it? Yellowcake.
Wow. And we've been out there for 3 years.
You're just having a brain fart tonight, huh? Yellowcakewalk.net.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll check it out now. All right, what?
Yeah. A couple of things came up that happened. I was at the protest over the weekend.
Uh-huh.
And there was a different composition there, I noticed, definitely. And it was more a lot of PO'd private citizens. I mean, of course, it was, you know, orchestrated by organizations and that sort of thing that, I mean, you could see, unlike a lot of the others, you could really see the presence of just everyday Joes that were just really sick of all the nonsense and the lies. I really saw it as something different. But I'll tell you, I'm amazed. I saw a handful of what I consider to be real patriots there. John Conyers was there, Maxine Waters, Dennis Kucinich was there.
I'm looking at some of the pictures from that event on your website. Hold on, I got to do a break. Hold on, hold on. I'll come right back to you. During the break here, check it out, yellowcakewalk.net. Good pictures. We'll be right back. For the hour, thanks to Ian, our engineer, Ian Huff, our engineer in Phoenix, who also handled your phone calls. Chris in Minnesota, our senior correspondent, Mark Marshall at MikeMolloy.com, and the moderators there on our website. Also, Catherine Bay, who's the executive producer of the program. And don't forget, go to NovamRadio.com and sign up for all sorts of goodies and a chance to win 10 grand. What the hell? I mean, seriously. All right, Bill in California, thanks for holding on. Bill?
Yes. I'm sorry. I'm kind of confused as to the fact that, you know, the conspiracy theory about the captains being killed when they were outspoken. You know,
Wait a minute. Bill, we were just, we were just talking right before the break, weren't we?
No.
No, I didn't think so. Let me put you back on hold. Matt in D.C. I'm sorry, Matt.
Oh, okay. Yeah, like I was saying, I think there was a completely different composition
right.
The protest. I think that Conyers and Maxine Waters and Kucinich, I think they have, or hopefully will, set new standards for what the Democratic Party is supposed to be.
Well, I hope so, too. That's been the hope for, you know, for so long, that these kinds of Democrats would take the party back to where it belongs, back to its roots.
I've been calling left and right. I've been making calls all week. It really inspired me being out there. And I called Barack Obama and asked him where he was that day. I mean, even my congressman who got real bad promo during the election as being a Bush sellout was there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, these people who profess to be something that, you know, I think him and Hillary Clinton are just posturing themselves, but these people that were there are the real thing, and I think they're the ones that people should watch for, you know, in elections, et cetera, particularly Kucinich. But, yeah, I think that I'm hoping to see that we took a turn. I don't know, though.
Well, I've been hoping that for some time, like you have also, I'm sure. I don't know what it's going to take, if not this. We have been drifting into this abyss here for the past 6 years, and the statements here in the past few weeks by Dick Cheney and George Bush and Rumsfeld before he was cashiered, and now Gates and the rest of these people, Gonzalez, all these statements taken together is a clear indication that, that this country is run by people who, if they are not clinically insane, are totally amoral and have no business. They're also lawbreakers. They're felons. And they're evil sons of bitches, and they need to be removed from office legally and peacefully, and I hope that happens. So I hope you're right. Matt, thanks.
Okay.
Appreciate you checking in. Now, Bill in California. All right, Bill.
Hello?
Hey, Bill. Hey.
Yes. The conspiracy theory about the captains being killed, that's a pretty far-fetched, isn't it? That, you know.
Now, which one?
I don't know. I kind of caught the end of it, but I was more. There's like a lot of things I got a problem with. One, the fact that soldiers have cheated like crap after the people that were elected are the one that sent us over there,
yeah.
First off. Secondly, I really do wish that, you know, the Democrats would go back to the way things used to be, you know, back to where their roots, you know, John F. Kennedy, where he was sleeping with movie stars and found the, you know, special operations, you know, in the military, you know, they kind of save, you know, let you and all your buddies sleep at night because you don't have to worry about walking down the street and cars blowing up. All the rights that everybody in this country abuse on a daily basis, you know, is pretty much given to you and founded, you know.
I'm not sure what you're talking about, Bill. You're losing me. Can you be a little bit more clear?
I'll pick one thing. The military.
Yeah.
Everybody bashes the military.
No, hold on.
Okay, let me
put him on hold. Put him on hold or dump him. I don't give a goddamn, but don't overtalk me. Don't ever do that. You overtalk me and I'm going to get rid of you. Not everybody bashes the soldiers, okay? Now, I think you're some kind of an idiot or a right winger who can't articulate what you're trying to say, so I'm going to get rid of you now. Goodbye. You know, don't do that crap to me. Who in the hell do you think you are? Don't do it. Save that stuff for some dingbat that will listen to your garbage. Jesus, where did these people come from? You know, there's too much serious stuff going on to put up with the jackasses like you, sir. So please do me a favor. Call some other program. Don't, you know, we're not interested here. We really aren't. I don't know why you right-wingers who are inarticulate and freaks and morons, why you can't get that straight. I'm not interested in playing with you, okay? Not the least. And I'm not interested in converting you because I can't. And I wish, you know, I just wish you all would dry up and blow away. I really do. Or if you'd all get together for a great big old kiss fest with a Limbaugh or somebody and get raptured into wherever the hell you think you're going to go. But don't call me because I don't like you. You're not interesting. You're not cute. You're not ironic. You're not funny. You're not intelligent. You know, it's just a waste of time. And especially this last jerk. It took me 3 minutes to figure out what the hell he's about. But don't do it. Please, I'm serious, you know. There are other talk show hosts, liberals, progressives, who will play with you. You know, I'm not interested. I've got, you know, I feel like there are more serious things to do than to waste time, my time and the listener's time, with your jive turkey nonsense. Thank you. Don't call me again. Jesus, you people are hard to educate, you right-wingers. I'm not interested in debating with you or converting you. You know, I don't care. Ugh. Freak. Well, on that happy note, program started depressing, it ends depressing tonight, huh? Tonight? Listen, thanks for participating however you did that. I do appreciate it, except the last guy. Yeah, I don't appreciate that. I'll see you tomorrow night. All right? Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.